Welcome back, 1144, 1260 WRC. Andy Parks live from the Washington Times, and I'm joined now by Washington Times political editor Stephen Dynan. Hello, Stephen.
Hello, Andy.
Saw the headline, as U.S. supply accelerates, gas prices stuck in neutral. Whatever happened to supply and demand? We're in the middle of an energy boom, but we're not receiving the benefits?
Yeah, no, and that's exactly the question a lot of people are asking themselves. It's sort of what got us wondering about this. There's no question, zero doubt, that the U.S. is in the middle of an energy boom, depending on what you want to compare our current production to. You know, we're up basically a third, 33%, I believe, in crude oil and 30% in natural gas over the last 3 to 5 years over where we were, producing far more. We hit this milestone, I believe, in October, where we finally produced as much crude oil as we imported. So that's just sort of an interesting benchmark that we are, you know, it doesn't mean we're energy neutral, but at least we hit this important point that we hadn't hit since, I think it had been two decades, 1995. So there's no question we're in the middle of an energy boom, but, you know, our prices have basically stayed about the same in the mid to low $3 range for now 3 years. And so we got to wondering what's going on and found out that, well, because the market is so global, it's not that our production is helping with the overall price, but it is helping with the stability. And that's sort of the best we can hope out of this right now.
Hmm. So we did save a little money, what, like maybe 10, 11 cents a gallon, something like that?
Yeah, so the highest gas price on record was 360, national average of 360 back in 2012, which happens to be right as the boom was really taking hold. So that's interesting in of itself. But last year, the average dropped slightly, about 11 cents or so to 349. And this year is projected to drop another dime to about 339 as a national average, you know, which is right about what we're paying here in the Washington area right now. We would generally pay slightly more than the national average usually, and our prices will certainly go up as the cyclical seasonal issue happens and we start converting over to our summer blend of gasoline. But, you know, there are a lot of questions about exactly what's going on there. A lot of people have different figures about how much of the price we're paying at the pump is actually the crude oil price and how much is other things, and how much in particular is government mandates that require us to do weird things with our gasoline at different times, and that makes it more expensive and makes it more volatile. So a lot of stuff now, basically the lesson we learned is that back in the old days when you had a lot, you know, prices were relatively low, the price was almost entirely dependent on crude oil. Now there are other things such as mandates, such as infrastructure, how much pipeline capacity we have, how much train capacity we have, where the refineries are versus the production, what those refineries, how they're dealing with both local production issues, local transportation issues, but also local and federal mandates. So much goes into the price of gas at this point that maybe the best we can hope for is better stability.
Yeah. Call me cynical, if you will, but many of us remember not all that long ago when former Energy Secretary Stephen Chu actually wanted higher gasoline prices. Remember that? He said it would force Americans to get on board with the administration's quest for alternate sources of energy. Surely this could not be related in any way to some government move, could it?
Well, so, you know, that's a good question, and there are a lot of folks who share that same cynicism. For that matter, there are a lot of folks who share the former Energy Secretary's attitude that we can either let supply and demand sort of sort this out, or we can actively put our finger on the balance and make the price so high that we change the demand part of it. You know, not really change the supply issue, but change the price so that you change demand and force these lifestyle changes and other changes that people believe that we need to do for supply reasons or for environmental reasons, global warming reasons, whatever the reason is. So there's no question that there are people out there who would like to do that. Whether that's actually happening or not is another question. You know, up here on Capitol Hill, the big thing the lawmakers want to know, they actually believe that it's not so much a government plot to manipulate prices as much as it is the companies manipulating prices, basically cartels operating to keep prices high for everyone so their profits are high. So this is one of those issues where there are a lot of different suspicions, and everybody sort of thinks they're getting gouged because they sit there and look at what they're paying now versus what they were paying 15 years ago and just don't understand it.
Yeah. Now, see, the other part of my conspiracy theory, if you allow me that, could it be we're propping up prices for those providers in the Middle East? You may recall just recently the Saudi oil minister expressed grave concern about the increasing levels of U.S. oil production.
Yeah. Yeah, you know, this is going to be a real issue coming up here. I believe in June, OPEC is going to meet, and they're going to basically deal with this. Do they alter their own quotas for their own members in order to basically reduce the overall world output to compensate for the increased U.S. output, and therefore, you know, boost prices back up a little bit more, or if put another way, in order to try and regain their dominance in the supply area. You know, and if they do that, what does the U.S. do? There's so many different moving parts now on this equation, and it's it makes my head spin.
In addition to all of this, we're actually using less fuel today as a result of new fuel standards, right?
Yeah, fuel standards, just other sort of technological advancements. That's exactly right. I believe it's about 600,000 barrels a day less that we use now than we did back in, say, 2006, 2007. You know, that's pretty interesting and pretty deep. You know, we're driving more miles, or overall, you know, the average commute is more miles. The average person who is driving more miles, but we're doing it using less fuel, and that's a good thing. In some ways, that's what Secretary Chu was trying to force us into. It's interesting. The folks I talked with on this said all those efficiencies were basically taking advantage of stuff that's already out there. Technology that's already out there that's been hanging around forever that we've been sort of slow adopters on. We aren't even really pushing the boundaries of technology yet in those efficiencies. That stuff can still come. So there's a lot of exciting stuff out there. I guess the question is, how ready are we all to embrace it, and what sort of changes will it force on this lifestyle if and when we do?
Mm-hmm. All right, one more thing before I let you run today. I saw your story, I guess it was day before yesterday, conservative groups hit Lankford as lawmaker announces bid for Coburn's Senate seat. You and I talked about the vacancy that will occur at the end of the year as a result of Tom Coburn backing away from the Senate for health reasons. Lankford is a guy who is getting some backlash right now. Why? His record?
Yeah, his record. And this is one of the things where he's a member of the elected House leadership. He's a very conservative lawmaker, but he's a member of the elected House leadership. That's caused, you know, sometimes he has to vote certain ways on certain things, including for some of the past debt limit increases and whatnot. And so there are groups out there that are attacking him, first of all, picking apart some of those specific votes, but chiefly the objection is, well, he's part of the House leadership. The House leadership hasn't done what we want, enough of what we want them to do in terms of spending cuts, in terms of tax cuts, in terms of forcing, you know, government shutdowns to limit the government, that sort of stuff. Because we disagree with House leadership and he's part of House leadership, he's tainted essentially by John Boehner, and so we aren't going to support him. They're not necessarily, some of them are actively recruiting other possible candidates, but by and large, this is basically just a statement of woe. We can't get behind that guy. If he were elected, I imagine they wouldn't necessarily be unhappy with him. But it's this weird situation where you continue to have this push and pull within the Republican primary electorate from ultra-conservative pressure groups who want somebody who is 100% pure or as close to that as possible and are attacking very conservative people for a few transgressions in their view. And it's a really interesting battle. It'll be interesting to see whether anybody else actually does get into the race and challenges Lankford from the Republican side. And of course, this is being Oklahoma, it's almost certain that whoever wins the Republican primary will be the eventual senator.
Yeah, that's for sure. So James Lankford says, hey, he would continue the work of exposing government waste, so that would be a good thing, right?
Yeah, you know, there are people, even before Coburn announced this early departure, there were people who are already talking about what happens, because Coburn has always been clear he was always only going to serve two terms, which would have put him done in 2016 anyway. And so Lankford had always been mentioned by a number of folks here on Capitol Hill as a logical successor to him and a guy who could possibly pick up some of those government reform issues. So that's why this is so interesting. You know, if you, in a vacuum, if this were 5-6 years ago and you put Jim Lankford up, everybody who looked at him would say, wow, that's a conservative Tom Coburn sort of guy. It's only in the past few years that we've begun to have these really, you know, to be honest, nasty fights over the level of purity, whether it's 95, 98, 100, or thereabouts.
Yeah, okay. All right, very good. Thanks for your help on all of this, Stephen. Have a good day.
My pleasure, Andy.
Stephen Dynan, Washington Times political editor, 1154, 1260 WRC. Andy Parks live from the Washington Times.